Bonneville's planned city, we bring you this presidential broadcast. Bonneville, Oregon is the site of the world-famous project to be known as Bonneville Dam. The site of this work is located on the Columbia River about 42 miles east of Portland. At this point, the river flows in a general westerly direction in two channels which are separated by Bradford Island. The center of the north channel is the boundary between the states of Oregon and Washington. This morning, beneath a clear blue sky, the presidential special pulled into this beautiful setting shortly before 7 o'clock. In this lovely little city, man has made a valiant effort to match the beauty of nature. And where once the great Columbia's banks were heavily wooded, a clearing has been made, and on its gentle slope, a charming village of early American and modified colonial homes has been built. Bonneville Dam and this model city were authorized on September 30th, 1933, just 4 years ago, day after tomorrow, by the Federal Administrator of Public Works. $51 million have been allocated for its construction, which is under the supervision of the Corps of Engineers, United States Army. At the present time, the party headed by the president is now on the speaker stand, and despite the obvious pressure he's under constantly on such a tour as this, he's his usual smiling self. Before our mutual network microphone now stands Governor Charles H. Martin of Oregon.
I stood before the president when he authorized the construction of this great tidewater dam. I informed him then that I thought that he was following in the footsteps of Thomas Jefferson and was sending a new Lewis and Clark expedition to rediscover the Northwest. The expedition is over. The work is done. And the president, like the Greeks of old, has come himself to rejoice with us in this great undertaking. Ladies and gentlemen, the president.
Martin, my friends of the Northwest. Today I have a feeling of real satisfaction in witnessing the completion of another great national project and of pleasure in the fact that in its inception 4 years ago, I had some part. My interest in the whole of the valley of the Great Columbia River goes back 17 years. To 1920, when I first studied its mighty possibilities. And again in 1932, I visited Oregon and Washington and Idaho, and on that visit, I took occasion in Portland to express certain views which have since, through the action of the Congress, become a recorded part of American national policy. Almost exactly 3 years ago, I inspected the early construction stages of this dam at Bonneville. The more we study the water resources of the nation, the more we accept the fact that their use is a matter of national concern, and that in our plans for their use, our line of thinking must include great regions as well as narrower localities. If, for example, we Americans had known as much and acted as effectively 20 or 30 or 40 years ago as we do today in the development of the use of land in that great semi-arid strip in the center of the country that runs from the Canadian border all the way down to Texas, we could have prevented in great part the abandonment of thousands and thousands of farms in portions of 10 states and thus prevented the migration of thousands of destitute families from those areas into the states of Washington and Oregon and California. We would have done this by avoiding the plowing up of great areas that should have been kept in grazing range, and by stricter regulations to prevent overgrazing. and at the same time, we would have checked soil erosion, stopped the denudation of our forests, and controlled disastrous fires. Some of my friends who talk glibly about the right of any individual to do anything he wants with any of his property take the point of view that it is not the concern of federal or state or local government to interfere with what they miscall the liberty of the individual. With them, I do not agree and never have agreed. Because unlike them, I am thinking of the future of the United States. Yes, my conception of liberty does not permit an individual citizen or a group of citizens to commit acts of depredation against nature in such a way as to harm their neighbors and especially to harm the future generations of Americans. If many years ago we had had the necessary knowledge and especially the necessary willingness on the part of the federal government to act on it, we would have saved a sum of money which in the last few years has cost the taxpayers of the nation at least $2 billion. Coming back to the watershed of the Columbia River, which covers the greater part of the states of Oregon and Washington and Idaho, and a part of Montana, it is increasingly important that we think of that region as a unit, and especially in terms of the whole population of that area, as it is today, and as we expect that it will be 50 or even 100 years from now. I appreciate and I fully understand the desire of some who live close to some of the great water sources of power in this watershed to seek the advantages that come from geographical proximity. More than 8 years ago, when I first became governor of the state of New York, we developed plans for the harnessing of the St. Lawrence River and the production of a vast amount of cheap power. The good people who lived within a few miles of the proposed dam were enthused by the prospect of building up a huge manufacturing center close to the source of the power, a sort of new Pittsburgh, a vast city, large population, whirling machinery. It was a natural dream on their part. But wiser counsels prevailed, and the government of the state laid down a policy based on the distribution of the proposed power to as wide an area as the science of transmission would permit. We felt that the governor and the legislature of the state owed it to the people in the smaller communities for hundreds of miles around to give them the benefit of cheap electricity in their homes, in their shops, and on their farms. And while the St. Lawrence project is, I'm sorry to say, still on paper, I have no doubt of its ultimate development and of the application of the policy of the widest possible use when the electric current starts to flow. And so, my friends, that is why, in developing electricity from this Bonneville Dam, from the Grand Coulee Dam, and from other dams to be built in the future on the Columbia and its tributaries, as they're going to be, this policy of the widest use ought to prevail. The transmission of electricity is making such scientific strides today that we can well visualize a date not far distant when every community in this vast area will be wholly electrified. And it is because I am thinking of the nation and the region. 50 years from now, that I venture the further prophecy that as time passes, we will do everything in our power to encourage the building up of the smaller communities of the United States. Today, many people are beginning to realize that there is inherent weakness in big cities, cities too large for the occasions of the time, and that there is inherent strength in a wider geographical distribution of population. An over-large city inevitably meets problems caused by oversize. Real estate values and rents become too high. The time consumed in going from one's house to one's work and back again becomes excessive. Congestion of streets and other transportation problems arise. Truck gardening in the backyard becomes impossible because the backyard becomes too small. Indeed, the cost of living of the average family rises too high. There is doubtless a reasonable balance in all of this, and it's a balance that ought to be given more and more study. No one would suggest, for example, that the great cities of Portland and Tacoma and Seattle and Spokane should stop their growth. But it is a fact that they could grow unhealthily at the expense of all the smaller communities of which they form logical centers. Their healthiest growth actually depends on a simultaneous healthy growth of every smaller community within a radius of hundreds of miles. Your situation here in the Northwest is in this respect no different from the situation in the other great regions of the nation. And that is why it has been proposed in the Congress that regional planning boards be set up for the purpose of coordinating the planning for the future, in 7 or 8 natural geographical regions. You will have read here, as elsewhere, many misleading and utterly untrue statements in some papers and by some politicians that this proposed legislation would set up all-powerful authorities that would destroy state lines, take away local government, and make what people call, I don't understand the phrases very well, but they sound big, people call totalitarian or authoritarian or some other kind of dangerous national centralized control. Most people realize, of course, that the exact opposite is the truth, that regional commissions will be far more closely in touch with the needs of all the localities and all the people in their respective regions than a system of plans which originates in the capital of the nation. By decentralizing, as I have proposed, the chief executive and the various branches of the government and the Congress itself will be able to get from each region a carefully worked out plan each year. A plan based on future needs. A plan that will seek primarily to help all the people of the region without unduly favoring any one locality or discriminating against any other. In other words, the responsibility of the federal government for the welfare of its citizens will not come from the top in the form of unplanned, hit-or-miss appropriations of money, but will progress to the national capital from the ground up, from the communities and the counties and the states which lie within each of the logical geographical areas. And my friends, another great advantage, because we do have to think of our pocketbooks, another great advantage will be served by this process of planning from the bottom up. Under our laws, the president has to submit to the Congress an annual budget. A budget which, by the way, we expect to have definitely balanced by the next fiscal year, next July 1st. In this budget, we know how much can properly be expended for the development of our natural resources, the protection of our soil, the construction of our highways and buildings, the maintenance of our harbors and channels, and all the other elements that fall under the general heading of public works. By regional planning, it will be vastly easier for the executive branch of the government and the Congress to determine how the appropriations for the following year shall be fitted most fairly and equitably into the total amount that our national pocketbook allows us safely to spend. To you who live thousands of miles away in other parts of the United States, who are hearing my voice at this time, I want to give two or three simple facts. This Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River, 42 miles east of Portland, with Oregon on the south side of the river and Washington on the north, is one of the major power and navigation projects undertaken since 1933. It's 170 feet high, and it's 1,250 feet long. It has been built by the Corps of Engineers of the War Department, and when fully completed, with a part of its power installations completed, will cost $51 million. Its locks will enable shipping to use this great waterway much further inland than at present, and give an outlet to the enormously valuable agricultural and mineral products of Washington and Oregon and Idaho. Its generators, incidentally, will produce 580,000 horsepower of electricity. Truly, in the construction of this dam, we have had our eyes on the future of the nation. Its cost will be returned to the people of the United States many, many times over in the improvement of navigation and transportation, the cheapening of electric power, and the distribution of that power to hundreds of small communities within a great radius. As I look on Bonneville Dam today, I cannot help the thought that instead of spending, as some nations do, half their national income in piling up armaments and more armaments for purposes of war, we in America are wiser in using our wealth on projects like this, which will give us more wealth, better living, and greater happiness for our children. And now, my friends, there are just two more things to do. First of all, in my official capacity and my personal capacity, for I know many of them, I want to extend the thanks of the nation to the men and the women who have made this dam. And secondly, I am going to go through what I suppose in some countries would be a very formal procedure. I'm going to press a button without any more words, and that will start everything going. Here it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just listened to a presidential talk from the site of the world-famous Bonneville Dam, Bonneville, Oregon. President Roosevelt is now leaving the speaker stand and entering the official car, which will convey him to the newly constructed Timberline Lodge on glorious old Mount Hood. From there, the president will again come to you over these same stations when he dedicates the lodge at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time or 1:30 Pacific Standard Time. In the belief that your curiosity has been piqued by the presidential talk here today, we offer you now a small portion of the story of Bonneville Dam. A spillway dam has been constructed in the north or main channel of the Columbia River, and the powerhouse and navigation lock is located in the south channel with the lock on the Oregon shore. A levee on Bradford Island connects the dam and the powerhouse. At the present time, the Columbia River is navigable to ocean-going vessels from its mouth to Vancouver, Washington, about 45 miles below the site of the dam. The present average controlling depth between Vancouver and Bonneville is 8 feet. Between Bonneville and the Dalles, after the pool has been formed, the average depth will be over 30 feet. As the needs of commerce develop, the channel between Vancouver and Bonneville can be deepened. This improvement, in conjunction with the lock and pool above, will make possible navigation for ocean-going vessels to the Dalles, a distance of 187 miles from the mouth of the river. The government engineering personnel consists of Corps of Engineers, United States Army, Major General Edward M. Markham, Chief of Engineers, Washington, D.C., Colonel Thomas M. Robbins, Division Engineer, North Pacific Division, Portland, Oregon. Major Theron D. Weaver, District Engineer, Bonneville, Oregon. Civilian Engineering Personnel, C.I. Grimm, Head Engineer, A.E. McKennett, Principal Engineer. This has been a presentation of the Special Events Division of KMO in Tacoma, Washington, and the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting Networks. Your announcer is Harry Jordan. At this time, we return you to the Mutual Network Station KALE in Portland, Oregon. Come in, Portland.